When you're selling a product, okay, you really have got to understand that unless you have something that differentiates you from the crowd, it's all about price.
Yeah.
And no startup business can survive when the conversation is simply about price.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast. On behalf of Wisenetics, I'm Adam Fahrenholz, coming to you from North Carolina State University and the Prestige Department of Poultry Science. I'm an associate professor here in the Animal Food Manufacturing Program. Thanks for joining us, whether you be on YouTube or via podcast. We appreciate both our viewers and our listeners. Our guest today is a repeat guest. We enjoy bringing folks back to kind of hear where they are in their journey or to hear about new things that they may have experienced and want to bring to our audience. So my guest today is Jared Froschner. Jared is a consultant with White River Ag Consulting, LLC. Jared, thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you, Adam. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. If you wouldn't mind, remind the audience, or for those that haven't seen your previous instances on the podcast, what it is that you do and kind of how you got to be doing what you're doing now?
Well, I've been around a bit. Obviously, you and I went to the same great university, the Kansas State University. I spent my time at Purina within the process research, process engineering group. I then traveled over with Roche that became DSM, and I did a tour there. And enjoyed my time there. I got into the liquid feed business then with High Plains Feed out in Garden City. And then DSM clawed me back, shall we say, for another tour with them, both in sales and also in site management. I had the opportunity to travel the world with Elanco, which I was very grateful for, and within their nutritional health group. And then after COVID, I decided to just kind of hang my own shingle out. And I've been doing this now since 21, and I've really enjoyed it. Had the opportunity to meet a lot of different people and do a lot of different things. So, that's kind of the background. By the way, you're very tan. Have you been tanning down there?
No, I have. Well, I don't know that we've had some nice weather coming out. So more weekends outside, time for yard work to start and soccer games and practices and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, maybe a little bit more in the sun. We're coming out of the winter in North Carolina, such as it is, which is not like the winter where you're at. So I can't.
I know
really
I'm very light. I need to get out and bronze a bit. And I wore my Superman shirt for you today.
Very nice.
Okay, so
very nice,
because I really think you're doing a great job down there.
I appreciate that. We do our best. It's a I think part of kind of what we're going to talk about today, it's an ever evolving world that we exist in the animal food world. Obviously that goes across the idea of livestock feed and pet food and ingredient manufacturing and everything else, and with chasing regulations and consumer demands and interest in new products, and there's just always something for us to do. And so I think that's, a really interesting thing for you to, maybe talk to our audience a little bit about, is when somebody wants to, start a new feed business or an animal food business of some sort, or they're expanding the one that they already have, getting into a new market, such as that might be in various different environments. What is that process like, from the standpoint of all of the things that have to go into it, from making decisions to, then actually executing those and moving forward?
Interestingly enough, here recently, I've ran into this interesting dynamic where people ask me this question. How do you start your own manufacturing business? There seems to be a trend right now for people wanting to do this. The first question I ask people is, well, what are you trying to sell? What are you selling? And I've been quite amazed that most people have no damn idea what it is that they want to sell.
Yeah.
So when you're selling a product, okay, you really have got to understand that unless you have something that differentiates you from the crowd, it's all about price.
Yeah.
And no startup business can survive when the conversation is simply about price, right?
Sure.
Because there's no difference between your product and the other person's product. So why would you invest money? Why would you invest your personal capital into a venture if you don't even know what sets you apart from the competition? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Nope. Absolutely. Absolutely. Gotta have that story to tell.
It's a story. And so most of the work at the front end should be setting out what your product is, what makes it different. Will the market accept this? Does the market need it?
Mm-hmm. We talk about that a lot in the context of, at least in my world, in the academic world, we talk about that a lot in the context of additives, and especially those things like medications and whatnot, that due to regulations and the amount of money that it takes to go, how many things are sitting on a shelf somewhere because there's not a desire to push them forward. And I think that probably goes down even to basic products and basic development of, you know, well, there's a big market. We know what people like, so we'll just keep making more of that, doing more of that with, you know, some little tweak here or there, but, you know, huge innovative changes in the product market. It doesn't seem, like something we're seeing a lot of, other than, like I said, maybe the occasional new ingredient to do something with sustainability or feed safety or maybe animal health. Those things crop up from time to time, but not some big new market thing. Yeah.
The point I'm driving at is that for folks considering to start their own manufacturing business, the hardest work is always done at the front end.
Yeah. That R&D phase of things, basically.
You see this?
Yeah.
You know what this is?
Can't quite tell. Oh, okay. Got it.
It's a notebook.
Yep. Yep.
In today's technological world, we have dropped the notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But early in the startup phase, it's the most critical asset that you have.
Jotting down every idea that comes, basically. Yeah.
Every idea. Yep. Because what is the relevance? Where does that lead, Adam?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sure. You know, you kind of looking at every idea and then letting those bounce off of each other. And then that leads to the next idea. And wait, nope, hold on. Let's go cross that one out. Turns out that was stupid. That's not going to work. And continuing that process. And you never know also where that idea is going to come. Right. You know, technologically, you know, if you want to use a notes app or something like that, if that's where you go, that's fine. But that idea of when something pops up into your head and being able to jot that down right now and what you're thinking about it, and you never know where that's going to go. It could take you in some completely, you know, crazy direction that ends up being that next product or the big product that you come up with.
Which is all true. And it also leads to this next point. If you have a great idea, if you think you have a world-changing idea, that simple practice of writing down the idea with a date, okay, that could make all the difference in the success of your company. That one simple aspect, because you don't know what someone else is doing.
Right. Yeah, it's a great point. Great point.
And what will happen is, let's say that your idea is inventive and you file for a patent. You don't know what your competition is doing. And that little piece of paper with that date could make all the difference in the world as to whether you get a patent or the person down the road gets the patent.
Yeah, it's good advice.
That's something that most people forget. No, let's just make something and let's just go out there. Well, you know, there are ramifications here. Yeah. And you can spend a tremendous amount of money. And then you get the letter from your attorney that says, somebody beat you to the punch by one day.
Good point.
Once you do that work, then we forget about the scale up. Okay. You should start at the bench top. Mm-hmm. Know your product. Know the chemistry. Know the physics, right? Mm-hmm. Remember all the chemistry classes that we had to take, right?
You bet.
What do you call it? What is it? The Maillard reaction?
Yep, that's one of them.
Well, that's one of them.
Non-enzymatic Browning. Yep, you bet.
But before you can go to actually making your product, you probably need to invest the time and the resources in understanding what happens to that product or what makes that product become a product. Okay?
Yep.
Then you scale up, right? And at every step, you document what your successes and failures are. Again, because you are learning about your product at the same time as you're making it. Okay?
Yeah. Yep.
Which ties into when it's time to sell it, you are the expert for your innovation. No one else knows it better than you. And now you start to tell a story and the whole situation wraps around to the backside.
Yeah. And I think that's especially important too, when you talk about the R&D side. And, you know, we've gotten to be involved here at the university. And even when I was a grad student at K-State, gotten to be involved in some of that early product R&D kind of things where somebody would have an idea and maybe it was done on the benchtop and it would be brought to a pilot facility to do that next scale. How can we, you know, what can we do next? And there is a huge difference between folks that it's kind of like, well, I had this idea. I'm not discouraging anybody that's got a good idea and isn't an expert in something. I'm not discouraging that at all. But there was always the difference between what you just said. I know all about my product. I know the things we've tried on the benchtop. I know what has worked and what hasn't, and I know why it's worked and why it hasn't. So as we scale it up, here are the things that I want to look at as far as how the product mixes together, how the product goes through a thermal process, what, you know, whatever the case may be. I know what I've seen in the past versus, yeah, we did this a little bit over here. We just want to throw it in the system and see what happens. And if it works or doesn't work, we don't have any basis of understanding as to why those things happen. And that makes a big difference in the kind of the timeline of moving forward with that R&D and that product development.
Absolutely. And I want to go a step further from what you just said, because you bring up a really great point. Everybody wants to rush it. You can't rush it. Okay. So you do your research, you do your studies. And remember, let me get my notebook again. You write it down. And you analyze your data, you analyze your successes or your failures, and then you do another experiment, okay? Because those failures are far more important than the successes at the beginning phase, because you learn what the limitations of your product and your process are.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we talked about, maybe one of the last times that you and I talked it would have been on the podcast, was about also taking the time to, you know, there's good books and stuff that are written on this, about taking the time to go learn about what maybe some of those R&D processes, timelines, successes and failures, what they looked like for some of the most common or impactful products that we see today. Cause if you don't go and teach yourself some about that, or if you don't otherwise have some sort of a inherent basis, cause you grew up around a business that was doing these kinds of things. The only thing that we see as a consumer of whatever it is, or as a competitor of whatever it might be as well, is the product at which point it has hit the market and the marketing and sales is happening, right? And we don't necessarily have any idea unless we kind of learn about what this process probably actually looked like for something, you know, cell phone, right? So everybody's got a cell phone. And, you know, when Tim Cook came out and, not Tim Cook, sorry, Yeah, Tim Cook. Who is the one that actually started the iPhone? I'm getting my
Apple CEOs. Steve Jobs, man.
Steve Jobs. Yeah, I was like, okay, no, it was before Tim. But so came out on stage and said, you know, here's the iPhone. And then obviously everything took off from that. And now we have Android and everybody else doing their thing. But unless you go read about just how many years and you know, between Apple and university partners and everybody else and all the technology that was behind that got to that point, it's just kind of like, oh, one day smartphones came into existence. And it's like, no. Smartphones did not pop into existence over the course of, you know what? We had this idea about a year ago. Here's this. That's not how that goes. And I think we, you know, anytime you see somebody and they're doing really well, or a company's doing really well, if this new innovative thing they've put in the market, you think, man, I've had good ideas. You know, I could have executed that. It's like, you might want to learn about what it took to take from the original idea to get to that point, because it's probably a lot more than you think it was.
Adam, I think that's another great point. And in fact, for those that are wanting to start their own business, their own manufacturing business with their own product, they should go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website on a frequent basis. I go there every other week and I search for applications, because you don't know what someone else is doing. And here's the thing about a patent. What does a patent contain within its contents, Adam?
I don't remember all of this stuff. At some point, I know I've looked, I've been taught some of this, but you know, product design, explanations, rationales, you know, you basically have to have, to my understanding, you have to have some proof that the idea is yours, that it is different enough from anything else that is marketed. And you have to have some description of how it works in concept, or what it does in concept.
Okay, so let's look at the fundamental. What is the fundamental bargain? What is the fundamental trade of a patent? The government gives you, the inventor, 19 years for a utility patent. Okay? In return, nobody can compete with you for 19 years. But in return, what do you have to give the government?
I do not know.
You have to disclose how you made it.
Right. Okay.
So let's talk about that. If you have an idea and you take it all the way through invention, scale up, marketing, and along the way you patent it, you get 19 total years on a utility patent with no competition for your product, for your idea. However, you have to teach the person behind you how you did it.
When you're 20, everybody can do it.
And that one person behind you who took the time to read that patent, your patent, will say, okay, he did this, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And now the circle continues. The innovation mm-hmm. circle continues. Mm-hmm. And again, let me pull it up. It all starts with a notebook.
And that's always where the kind of the whole like axiom of anything that is patented, and it certainly applies to, you know, the animal food world as much as it does to consumer electronics and everything else. It's, you know, people look at something and say, wow, you know, that's kind of expensive. It doesn't seem like it cost that much to make that product, and you know, the margin must be really high. And it's like, well, that's how much it costs to make the product now. But the first one off the line effectively cost this many millions of dollars to do, and we're still trying to recoup that over our 19 years. And so it's another good thing for us to understand as consumers that you're not just paying for what the product costs to make today plus the profit margin. You're still paying for the development of that product, especially when it's still under patent control.
You know, and I think that leads into the next. This is another difficult topic for people wanting to start a business, a manufacturing business, is pricing. Okay?
Yeah. Yep.
At the end of the day, the market will only bear so much. So you have to understand what your market is, and you have to price your products reflective of what that market will bear.
So what's that process look like? What from some, you know, from developing a business, and then once the business and the products are developed in it, and you're doing that for the first time, and then you're continuously doing that. When you say you need to know what the market will bear, how do you figure that out? Because, you know, guess and check is probably a part of that, but it's not everything you want to try to base your business off of, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we all kind of know, I mean, within our respective industry, within our respective industries, we kind of know what the market's going to bear, right? I mean, let's talk about Phytase in the early days, okay? When Phytase first came out, there's a monetary value associated with phosphorus nutrition, right? That's a known value. So the key is when you're pricing those things is that you know, okay, I'm going to return this much to the customer, but I'm going to ask for this much for the product, right? Now, obviously, as your product matures, have you ever heard of the 7-year innovation curve for products?
Doesn't ring a bell to me.
It means something, okay? If you look at the history of products, okay, all products have a 7-year curve. And it changes a little bit by industry, right?
Sure, sure.
Basically, when you launch a product, you have 7 years. This is really important for products that are patented. You have 7 years to peak sales, to peak revenue. Okay? After that, revenue starts to decline. Okay? You can continue to grow your way through it by expanding the market. Mm-hmm. But the issue that you face is that somebody is always behind you. So the point of this curve is that you start to get pricing pressure about 7 years in. Okay? Okay. Somebody else has got a better widget behind you. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the problem with capitalism. Now, if we were in a market-controlled economy, we sure don't want to say the name China. Did I say that today? Anyway, they don't particularly have these issues because it's a controlled market. Mm-hmm. But anywhere else in the world, you have to understand that there's a period of time where your product will reach maximum return for you.
Yeah.
The point is you either continue to innovate and bring new products to the market, new ideas to the market, or you ride this thing into the sunset and watch your market share and or your market return decrease.
We talked a little bit before and kind of in our last, you know, kind of closing minutes of the recording here. We talked a little bit before about, you know, you got to tell that story. Where is kind of the balance or the optimization or whatever the right phrase might be between I'm telling a story and I'm doing my marketing and I'm actually actively innovating and bringing new things? You know, how much can someone expect to do with I haven't really innovated anything new, but I'm telling a really good story and I've got a crack marketing idea and team and that sort of stuff versus, yeah, eventually the consumer will kind of give up on that and they want to see something new or you're going to be done.
Your question is complex. And we could probably do a whole other session on this.
Maybe we will.
But I'm going to go one direction here. From what I see in the marketplace today, okay, this younger generation, and it really pains me to have to say this, Fahrenholz, okay? This younger generation doesn't know how to sell.
Okay, yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. To them, it's just a job. Mm-hmm. Your question is complex because selling is a process, okay? So let me ask you a question. What is the average number of calls, of sales calls, that you have to make on a customer before they go to yes?
Oh man, that's a great question. I'm sure that there are numbers to that. I'm sure you're going to give them to us. Not my world. I can tell you from, you know, just from the academic perspective, you know, the amount of time we have to go to people that were asking for grants or support or whatever. It's, you know, it's a lot. It's building that relationship and convincing them that you're right. So
you're selling. Selling.
Right.
The average number is 7.
We seem to have 7 popping up a lot.
You need to be in front of that customer, positioning your product, positioning the idea, positioning the placement, positioning everything. You notice I didn't say price, did I?
Right. That's right.
You're in front of that customer 7 times before they move to say, I want to take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, obviously, you can hire an old seasoned dog. Some of us old people that know how to sell, you can probably shorten it by a sales call or two, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the relationship piece.
Sure.
If you've got a brand new innovative product that nobody's heard of, it could go up to 12. Okay.
Yeah.
But the point is that it takes time. It takes effort. It takes sweat. You got to be out there beating down doors and selling your product. You know, I met Pierce Lyons one time. Mm-hmm. The first time I met him. Okay. He truly was a treasure to the industry. I met and talked with him twice. The first time he asked everything about me, and the second time was 4 years later, he remembered every detail about me and my family.
That's a heck of a skill.
He told me a story the first time that when he started with his product, with Altex products, he drove around the countryside in a grocery getter, okay, a station wagon, handing out samples to his customers, his future customers.
Yep.
That's a lonely place to be, isn't it?
Yep.
Lonely. Another guy that told me that story was the guy that started ZenPro. Did the same thing. He cooked his zinc methionine in an oven at home. Can you imagine the smell his wife had to deal with?
The stories, the stories behind, you know, the integrated poultry and swine. I mean, there's somebody that started with a few somewhere in a pasture or in a barn and had to just keep grinding to make that actually work. To your point, like, you know, knowing how to sell and then having something to sell, both of those things are incredibly important, but they're two different sides of a coin in many ways.
And that's, there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that's probably represents one of the challenges for people that want to start their own manufacturing business is you can't be everything to everyone.
Right.
And so a given person may have a skill set, let's say in manufacturing, but they don't understand, or they say they don't understand how to sell. Okay. Yeah. So then it comes to the concept of you have to hire the best people. You have to hire people that are smarter or more talented in other areas advance your business, right? I mean, that's kind of become commonplace at this point, right?
Absolutely.
So know your limitations, right? I mean, I know what my limitations are. Mm-hmm. Do that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to do that own, what do you call that, skill inventory on a frequent basis.
Mm-hmm.
What have I done right? More importantly, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
Because there's no corporate, corporate drone sitting there giving you quarterly reviews.
That's
telling
right.
Telling you that you didn't fill out the TPI reports in a timely manner. So you're not going to get your extra pittance for the next year, okay? You have to do it yourself.
Deep in the jungle, nature holds the secrets to healthier, happier chickens. Science is unlocking those secrets with Optient, the revolutionary lighting innovation for poultry farming. By mimicking nature, Optient Gradient Lighting creates a unique floor-level lighting gradient that improves feed conversion by up to 4 points, slashes energy use by 70%, and keeps flocks calm and stress-free.
That means better animal welfare and a more efficient farm. Want to learn more? Optient Gradient Lighting is now available exclusively through your local Valco dealership or email optient@val-co.com today.
That's right. Now, if you're going to be in that entrepreneurial space, start a business, if you're going to be kind of really in any leadership capacity whatsoever, if you look around at your team and you think some combination of the things, I'm the smartest person in the room, or I know the most about everything of everybody in this room, you're either hopefully just wrong and you need to think about, you know, your mentality there, or you've done a bad job building your team. Like that's not a good place to be, where, I mean, I'm the most knowledgeable person here of everybody I've brought. Then you need to go hire some people that know more about some of these things than you do. Or what are you doing?
Well, you see that, you know, me coming out of the corporate world, you see that it's really bad today. I mean, you see these corporate drones that literally, they accomplish nothing in life. All they do is shuffle paperwork, right? But if you listen to them talk, they're the most intelligent people in the world. They probably need to do a skills inventory themselves, sure. Right?
Yeah.
Probably before the next round of layoffs come, which I hear is getting a little tight these days. But anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm sure we're going to do this again, because we always have really good conversations. I appreciate your time and I appreciate your insight, and hopefully our audience, or those that are thinking about whether thinking about starting their own business or thinking about going into this industry of ours in an innovative role, someone in an R&D type space, a lot of these lessons, you know, they work in all different avenues of, you know, think these things through step by step, have the right mentality, be prepared for failure, write down your ideas. All of these things matter kind of anytime you're in that creative role within your company or a company you work for, either way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Adam, and enjoy your wonderful day back there in North Carolina.
We will do as well as we can. My guest today again has been Jared Froschner. Jared is a consultant with White River Ag Consulting, LLC. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you. See you, folks.
You bet. Once again, I'm Adam Fahrenholz from North Carolina State University. And on behalf of Wisenetics, thank you for listening and watching the Feed Science Podcast. Please like, review, give us comments. Let us know what you'd like to hear more about. Until then, we will talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.